Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, April 13th, 2024. Blong, time to tap oilfield tech to improve aquifers. Mayor Lori Blong spoke during the Midland Chamber's State of Midland Thursday about the possibility of using technology used in oil fields to possibly improve the quality of currently unused subterraneous water in the city. The mayor spoke at the Midland Chamber's State of Midland event at the Bush Convention Center on Thursday. Blong gave an update on the state of local projects and initiatives, as well as future priorities for the city's development. During the State of Midland event, Blong showed a map of Midland's water sources, none of which are in Midland. They include Lake Thomas, Lake Spence, and the OHIV Reservoir. They all feed into the Colorado River Municipal Water District and account for 70% of the city's water supply. T-Bar Ranch and Clearwater in Winkler County are subterranean water sources that account for 30% of the city's water supply, Blong said. Quote, we relied on the planning of previous leaders all the way back to the 50s and 60s who made acquisitions of well fields far away from Midland, and then they made plans for bringing that infrastructure to be able to bring water to Midland, end quote, Blong shared. The mayor said the city is exploring a pilot program that may be able to purify existing untapped water in Midland. Quote, we know that surface water, what happens to Texas lakes during a drought, they dry up. We've worked really hard, as have previous councils, to plan ahead of that, and we've identified some water sources, end quote. The mayor said. Blong added that the city has been in contact with five different companies that may be able to use oil field technology to purify subterraneous water. Quote, we can purify some of the subterraneous water that we previously thought was not worth trying to process for municipal use, end quote, Blong said. Quote, we have a pilot program. We're going to be going out for RFP, request for proposal, for that in the next couple of weeks, end quote. The pilot program will use oil field technology to advance the municipal water system. Quote, we believe that Midland can be on the cutting edge of doing this and show not just our region, but our state and our nation that we on how we can more efficiently use our water that's available to us, end quote, she said. Lee's Bistro, now open in Midland, offering Vietnamese fare. For months, I had passed by the Lee's Bistro Coming Soon sign on Wall Street near the intersection of Andrews Highway and Garfield with Hope. Now, this locally owned gem is open, serving fresh homemade Vietnamese dishes, sandwiches, salads, wings, and teas. Although Lee's Bistro recently opened, and my profiles typically focus on established locally owned businesses, the owners of Lee's Bistro already have a strong Midland presence with their other restaurant, I Love Pho. When I met a friend for a late weekday lunch, I found the restaurant quiet and mostly empty. However, after my dining experience, I suspect and hope this will be short-lived. Lee's Bistro features a neat, no-frills dining room where patrons can watch their food being prepared in the spotless kitchen. Open every day except Wednesday, the restaurant offers a pleasant space, particularly suited for lunch. With a brightly painted interior and natural light streaming in from the wall of windows, the service was quick and friendly without being intrusive. The menus posted online and through delivery services reveal a focus on soup, salad, sandwiches, and lighter lunch fare. However, to the delight of my lunch companion and me, the dine-in menu at Lee's also features a broader selection of Vietnamese dishes, including seafood and ramen. We began the meal with an order of two egg rolls, which arrived quickly with crisp, crackly wrappers, a flavorful vegetable-centric filling, and a side of sweet and spicy dip. My companion ordered the salt and pepper shrimp, searching for a local dish that mirrored her favorite shrimp dish in Las Vegas. She reported that Lee's satisfied her craving without the expense of a plane ticket. The shrimp were served battered and fried in a light, seasoned rice flour breading atop a bed of sautéed onions and jalapenos. The crisp breading wasn't oily, and the delicate flavor of the shrimp stood out. A side of rice and a small, fresh salad completed the reasonably sized portion. As a noodle enthusiast, I ordered the spicy beef filet ramen soup. topped with lightly steamed vegetables, crunchy bean sprouts, and a flavorful pickled mix. The beef strips in the ramen were plentiful and tender. Although the red pepper depicted on the menu should have been a warning, I was still surprised by the heat level. However, the broth's rich flavor was evident, even with the spice. The ramen portion was large enough for leftovers, which was perfect after adding some extra noodles to temper the heat. With a varied menu and most dishes priced under $15, Lee's Bistro offers something for everyone. My next visit will be for Sunday brunch to try the bo nay, a Vietnamese breakfast dish with eggs and various proteins. Or perhaps a takeout lunch for a lighter sandwich on a fresh baguette baked daily. Or even an afternoon visit for a cup of tea and an order of mango sticky rice before mangoes go out of season. Regardless, I know I'll return to Lee's Bistro soon to enjoy the fresh dishes, reasonable prices, and friendly service. I continue to recommend this spot for a quick and pleasant local meal in Central Midland. Oil prices are rising while natural gas prices are falling. Crude oil prices have risen 20% so far this year, but Permian Basin producers are being impacted by natural gas prices that have been negative since mid-March. Gas, crude, and natural gas liquids marketing consultant Michael Bonchback reports that due to continued long-duration pipeline maintenance on relatively new long-haul pipelines, the balance of the month daily Waha prices are projected to be negative $1.75 per million British thermal units, which would make the average daily April price about negative $1.40 per MMBTU. The first of the month April Waha index was negative 14 cents per MMBTU, and projected first of the month May Waha index is negative 10 cents per MMBTU. Quote, you should take this into account when projecting April gas revenue and whether or not to continue selling wellhead gas in April, end quote, he wrote. Natural gas futures rose 4 of 5 trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange, but were unable to overcome Thursday's 12-cent drop that sent Henry Hub prices below $1.80 per MCF. The price ended the week at $1.770, down from $1.785 at last Friday's close. A combination of firming supply and demand fundamentals and a ratcheting up of tensions in the Middle East are supporting West Texas Intermediate on the NYMEX. The prospect of an Israeli attack on Iran sent WTI futures near $88 Friday before prices eased. WTI rose 3 of 5 trading days but could not overcome Tuesday's $1.20 drop or Thursday's $1.19 fall. Prices closed the week at $85.66, down from $86.59 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $82.14, according to Plains All American. Quote, it doesn't matter if the U.S. is self-sufficient. It's a global market, and if something happens one place, the market goes up everywhere, end quote. Mark Finley, fellow in energy and global oil at Rice University's Baker Institute, told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview. Finley said there is a weird combination of factors in the oil markets currently. From the firming of supply and demand fundamentals as the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and allied nations are holding firm to their production cuts, to rising tensions in the Middle East. The flip side of the aggressive production cuts by OPEC Plus is a rise in spare capacity, which he called fairly high and could be relevant in case of significant supply disruptions. U.S. consumers are feeling the impact at the gasoline pump, since oil prices drive gasoline prices and play into inflation, he said. Quote, it could get worse, end quote, he cautioned, if fighting between Israel and Hamas spills into producing countries like Iran and puts supplies at risk, or if oil tanker through the Strait of Hormuz is halted or slowed. Quote, that's an oil analyst's worst case scenario, end quote. Midland Police. Collaborative effort helps nab fuel thieves. The Midland Police Department, in conjunction with the Texas Comptroller's Office, Texas Department of Public Safety, and Ector County Sheriff's Office, conducted an operation on April 3rd regarding fuel thefts that occurred in Ward County, Howard County, Midland County, and Ector County. During this operation, the suspects were observed stealing fuel from a convenience store in Midland. Shortly after, the suspect vehicles were detained and 3 individuals were arrested. During this operation, a substantial amount of fuel was located in one of the suspect vehicles. Midland County recaps law enforcement facility projects. Midland County is in various stages of development regarding three separate law enforcement facilities: a new county jail, a new Justice of the Peace annex, and a new sheriff's office. Each of these projects is a result of the law enforcement complex facilities assessment performed by the county in 2024. The assessment defined potential future projects to modernize the current capacities of the county. The Commissioner's Court has acted with reserve regarding these proposed improvements to law enforcement capabilities. In 2023, the County Commissioner's Court chose to purchase an existing property at SH 715 and CR 120 to house the new Midland County Sheriff's Office. The property includes a building for the numerous law enforcement branches of the Sheriff's Department, SWAT, Patrol, CID, Administration, and others. Currently, a project is underway to connect water and sewer services to the new Sheriff's Office building. The new property and its required improvements have been fully funded with general county funds, incurring no debt. In December 2022, the Commissioner's Court authorized Burns Architecture to design a new Midland County Jail. The 2021 assessment determined that adding to the existing county jail near downtown Midland would not be cost-effective. As of February 2024, the design is completed and has been turned over to two entities for the next steps. The Texas Commission on Jail Standards is performing its final review of the construction plans to ensure compliance with state law and jail standards. Also, the selected contractor, White Construction, is performing its duties as a construction manager at risk by producing a guaranteed maximum price and schedule, which will be used to execute an agreement between White Construction and Midland County to build the new facility as designed. Final timelines and expectations are currently being negotiated. The contractor expects to break ground in June 2024 and complete the facility by November 2026. Funding for the new jail, which is expected to cost $170 million, is being acquired through the Certificate of Obligation process. Bringing all four precincts together in a common courthouse annex is a priority for the Commissioner's Court. In March 2023, the Commissioner's Court authorized Burns to design a new Justice of the Peace annex. This new facility will accommodate all four Justices of the Peace, Constables, and Warrants Division. In addition, the County Death Investigator's Office will be included in the project. Planning continues to progress toward final construction drawings. The selected contractor, MW Builders, is contracted as a construction manager at risk to build the new annex this fall. The county anticipates groundbreaking in late fall 2024. The new facility planning and future construction have been fully funded with general county funds, incurring no debt. The construction project's final costs are expected to be approximately $20 million. Drilling activity falls despite strong oil prices. Crude prices may be rising, but they are offering no support to drilling activity. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said the U.S. rig count it has issued weekly for 70 years declined for a fourth consecutive week, dropping three rigs to 617 for the week. That's 134 rigs, or 18% below the 751 rigs at work a year earlier. The number of rigs drilling for crude dropped by two rigs to 506 rigs, down 84 from the 590 rigs seeking crude a year earlier. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas dropped by one rig to 109, the lowest level since January 2022. It's also 49 rigs less than the 158 reported last year. Texas dropped three rigs for 294 rigs active statewide, 83 fewer than the 377 seen last year, and was the only producing state to see a decline. New Mexico added one rig to have 109 active statewide and was the only producing state to see an increase. The Permian Basin fell one rig to have 316 rigs at work in the region, down 37 rigs from 353 last April. Eddy County, New Mexico continues to be the most active county in the Permian with 59 rigs, up one for the week. Lee County, New Mexico remains in second, reporting 47 rigs for a third consecutive week. Martin County had 37 rigs for a second week, while Loving County had 23 rigs for a third week. Midland County continued its winning streak for a second week, adding one rig for 22 rigs at work within county lines. Reeves County dropped one rig for 21. Upton County gained a rig to have 18 rigs this week. Reagan and Ward counties each reported 13 rigs, down one for Reagan and unchanged for Ward. Howard County had 12 rigs for a second week, and Culberson County reported 11 rigs for a seventh consecutive week. Energy Focus Software as a Service firm in Varis said its U.S. rig count for the week ended April 5th added two rigs for 656 active rigs. That's 175 rigs, or 21% less than the 831 active rigs a year ago. ConocoPhillips continues to top the list of the 10 most active operators by rig count with 30 rigs, unchanged for the week. EOG Resources was second with 28 rigs, also unchanged for the week. And Occidental Petroleum was third with 27 rigs, down one for the week. In Varis, Permian Basin rig count jumped 8 rigs to 322 rigs for the week ended April 5th, 51 rigs, or 14% below the 373 rigs active in the Permian a year ago. The most active play, the Delaware Basin, added one rig for the week for 179 rigs, down 17 rigs, or 9% from 196 rigs last year. Second place Midland Basin also added one rig for the week to have 122 rigs, 32 rigs, or 21% below the 154 rigs drilling in the basin in the previous year. Looking at Enverus trailing 30-day drilling permits, the Permian had 708 permits for the week ended March 22nd, well below the 772 reported the previous week and the 887 reported a year earlier. Enverus also reported the Permian had 123 frac crews for the week ended March 22nd, up from 118 the previous week, but below the 138 crews a year ago. Life Tributes. Linda Sue Calloway, 2/19/1949 to 4/2/2024. Linda Sue Calloway, 75, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024. A celebration of life will begin at 4:30 p.m. on Monday, April 15th, 2024, at the Grassland Clubhouse, 5800 Crowley Boulevard, Midland, Texas. There will also be a celebration of life at 11 o'clock a.m. on Saturday, April 20th, 2024, at Eichenhorst Funeral Services, 12412 FM, 2854 Road, Conroe, Texas. Linda was born on February 19th, 1949, in Glenmora, Louisiana, to Calvin Evans and Joy Hudgens. Linda is survived by her mother, Joy Warren, Aunt Doris Carlisle, Uncle Tommy Hudgens, cousins Sandra Carlisle and Will Hudgens, niece Miranda Smerkar, nephew Jeffrey Evans, and grandniece Lainey Smerkar. Linda is also survived by her husband Michael Calloway, stepmother Maxine Calloway, brother-in-law Billy Calloway, sister-in-law Lisa Calloway, stepniece Serena Ramos, and stepnephews Jason Craven, Shelton Hand, and Dylan Calloway. She is also survived by numerous friends, distant relatives, and in-laws, which she cherished almost as much as family. Linda is preceded in death by her father, Calvin Evans, son, Samuel Johnston, father-in-law, Bill Calloway, niece, Christina Evans Disler, brother, Michael Evans, sister, Wanda Leggett, and numerous other aunts, uncles, grandparents, in-laws, and friends. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Monty Joe Gist, 4/1/1934 to 4/5/2024. Monty Joe Gist of Midland, Texas, passed away peacefully in his home on Friday, April 5th, 2024, at the age of 90. Monty was born on April 1st, 1934, in Texoma, Oklahoma, to Hoyt and Lila Gist. Monty is survived by wife Shirley and sons Mark Gist of Austin, Texas, and Rhett Gist and wife Janice of Midland, Texas. Grandchildren Cutler Gist and wife Shock of Colorado Springs, Colorado. Kelson Gist and wife Lauren of Austin, Texas. Morgan Gist McDonald and husband Chad of Midland, Texas. And Darcy Gist Sorens and husband Eric of Sherwood, Oregon. And eight great-grandchildren. Cutler's children, Thatcher and Mabel, Kelson's children, Alyssa and Riley, and Morgan's children, Cora, Ewan, Meredith, and Zelda. Monty is preceded in death by his parents, Hoyt and Lila Gist, sister Gwen Gist, and great-grandson Mercer Gist. The family will hold a private service. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Betty Lou Harry Taylor, 2/2/1936 to 4/8/2024. Betty Lou Harry Taylor passed away peacefully into the arms of her Savior on Monday, April 8, 2024, at the age of 88. She was born February 2, 1936, along with her twin sister, to Ernest and Alice Harry. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Weldon, her son Forrest, and her sisters and their spouses. She is survived by her children Cindy, Jeff, Harper, her son Perry, Anna Taylor, her grandchildren J.D., Ashley, Harper, and Kristen Brian Brockman, her great-grandchildren Jeffrey and G.W. Harper, and Brinley and Brooklyn Brockman. She is survived by numerous nieces and nephews. The family will receive guests from 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. Sunday, April 14, 2024, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. Monday, April 15, 2024, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. A reception will follow at the branch at NPW. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Edgar Z. Juarez. Edgar Z. Juarez, 26, passed away on Tuesday, April 9, 2024. Viewing will be Sunday, April 14, 2024, from 1 o'clock p.m. to 9 o'clock p.m., with a rosary beginning at 7 o'clock p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass is set for Monday, April 15, 2024, at 2 o'clock p.m. at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral Mass is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net. Or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Oil Report. Diamondback, Oklo, signed deal for power agreement. In search of electricity to power its operations, Diamondback Energy is turning to nuclear energy. The Midland-based operator has signed a letter of intent to collaborate with Oklo on a 20-year power purchase agreement, PPA. Under the agreement, Diamondback will utilize the small modular reactors manufactured and operated by Oklo, known as the Aurora Powerhouse, capable of generating 50 megawatts of electric power to Diamondback operations near Midland. Oklo will license, build, and operate the powerhouses under a 20-year PPA term, which can be extended for an additional 20 years. Oklo is a fission, clean power technology and nuclear fuel recycling company. Quote, we are proud to announce our LOI with Diamondback to supply clean and reliable electricity to their operations, end quote. Bonita Chester, Director of Communications and Media at Oklo, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Quote, increasingly, operators are seeking for solutions to meet their growing energy demands while prioritizing low-cost, high-reliability, and emission-free sources, end quote. Beyond operators like Diamondback, Oklo is engaged in active dialogues with a range of potential customers, including data centers, defense agencies, factories, industrial facilities, rural/off-grid communities, and utilities, Chester added. In a statement announcing the agreement, Oklo founder Jake DeWitt commented, quote, the collaboration between Oklo and Diamondback represents a significant step towards emissions reductions and supporting national energy security. By providing reliable access to electricity to power domestic energy operations, end quote. DeWitt, who traveled to Midland last October, said during his visit, the small modular reactors Oklo manufactures can help close the transmission gap between the growing demand for electrified oil field equipment and available electricity on the grid. He came to Midland with Chris Wright, Chief Executive Officer of Liberty Energy, which has invested $10 million in Oklo. Chester told the Reporter-Telegram the company is conducting regulatory work with the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission to support its first commercial deployment of the Aurora Powerhouse in 2026 or 2027 in Idaho. Quote, "This work for our first plant is significant because we are pursuing a combined license application, COLA, for design, construction, and operations, which is expected to be more efficient and repeatable. In other words, future COLAs can be filed as subsequent COLAs to the initial reference COLA. This enables us to offer our customers a timely, clean, reliable, and affordable solution," end quote, she wrote. New analysis doesn't see peak oil demand for a while. Some analysts are pushing back on expectations global oil demand will peak or plateau by the end of this decade. Quote, "Both OPEC and IEA global oil demand estimates require significant change in consumption behavior or a reversal of off-oil measures over a short period. History is not in their favor," end quote, Al Salazar, director at Enverus Intelligence Research, wrote in his report, pushing back on peak oil demand. Instead, he wrote, EIR analysts believe the rate of demand growth will gradually slow but not peak. EIR forecasts global demand will grow to about 108 million barrels a day by 2030. However, the regional dispersion of the growth changes dramatically. Salazar provided the Reporter-Telegram with a graphic showing the oil demand growth rate in the U.S. falling from 2024 to 2035, along with demand in Europe and Asia. Chinese demand growth halves during that time, he pointed out, and is replaced with other emerging Asian regions like India. Quote, "The fascinating thing about the Permian is all the associated gas that comes with the oil production," end quote, Salazar wrote. Quote, "For the Permian to be able to seize the opportunity of increasing oil demand, extra gas takeaway capacity is needed soon, especially if flaring is frowned upon. In short, the Permian can provide the oil. Its biggest challenge is accommodating the natural gas that comes with it," end quote. EIR is basing its expectations on several pieces of evidence. First, fuel economy standards have underwhelmed their stated targets, and second, electric vehicle momentum appears to slowing in the U.S. EIR analysts do see some headwinds for demand, particularly after 2030. One headwind is rising supply costs, and the lack of new supply projects is likely to push oil prices higher, especially after 2030. Those higher prices, combined with off-oil measures like electric vehicles, could result in peak demand in the 2030s. Quote, "In the 2030 to 35 period, peak demand, we think, is likely to occur due to high prices curbing demand in combination with an acceleration of off-oil measures like a rise in electric vehicles," end quote, Salazar wrote. EIR calculates that 3.7 million barrels a day will be displaced by electric vehicles and single-use plastic bans by 2030. While the International Energy Agency forecasts electric vehicles will displace 3.4 million barrels of oil a day by 2030, EIR puts that at only 2.7 million barrels per day. While EVs currently have negative momentum in the U.S., EIR sees the vehicles gaining significant market share by 2035. EIR calls the impact of global single-use plastic bans on oil and natural gas consumption a key blind spot. It cites a forecast from BP's chief economist that such a ban could displace 1.5 million barrels a day by 2030. It also cites an IEA forecast that 800,000 barrels per day would be displaced. EIR's own forecast is for about 1 million barrels a day to be displaced. Overall, EIR's analysis does not see the needed material shifts in consumption per capita trends by region and product, nor does it see the disconnect between economic growth and oil consumption needed for oil consumption to peak prior to 2030. Quote, "Our demand forecasts result in a world where OPEC's influence on oil price strengthens, supporting the group's preference for Brent prices of $85 to $105 per barrel," end quote, said Salazar in the report. Texas oil and gas production shattered records in 2023. Texas oil and natural gas producers shattered records for statewide production in 2023, according to the Texas Railroad Commission. The commission said Texas oil production hit a record 1.92 million billion barrels in 2023, about 51 million barrels more than the previous record of 1.86 billion barrels set in 2019. Texas natural gas production set a record at 12.01 trillion cubic feet, besting the previous record by over 13%. And agency figures show the Permian Basin dominated production. According to commission figures, Midland dominated Texas counties in oil production, producing 224,924,029 barrels last year. Martin County was a close second with 213,035,219 barrels, followed by Reeves County with 167,395,697 barrels. Reeves County was the state's top natural gas producing count with 1,092,814,942 MCF of production. Webb County followed with 1,042,394,241 MCF. Midland County placed third with 817,564,332 MCF. Quote, Texas new production and export milestones continue to highlight the Lone Star State's role as a global energy leader, showcasing that energy leadership starts and should stay in Texas, end quote, said Texas Oil and Gas Association President Todd Staples in a statement. TXOGA Chief Economist Dan Formans added, quote, Texas' strong performance across the energy value chain has meant that U.S. energy increasingly depends on our state. Ample production has replenished oil and natural gas inventories and kept downward pressure on consumer prices despite solid domestic consumption and record highs for oil and natural gas exports. It's a remarkable productivity narrative, end quote. In announcing the production records, Wei Wang, the commission's executive director, commented, quote, these production records are beyond impressive and reflect how Texas continues to provide reliable domestic production for the nation. As the state's oil and gas regulator, the RRC is committed to our critical mission of supporting Texas' economic growth that benefits Texans. Production taxes collected from the oil and gas industry pay for our schools, highways, and the state's rainy day fund. The commission will continue its hard work to ensure the state remains at the forefront of the energy sector, end quote. 2023 Top 10 Oil Production Counties, Barrels. Midland, 224,924,029. Martin, 212,035,219. Reeves, 167,395,697. Loving, 146,444,645. Howard, 137,214,024. Carnes, 99,049,472. Upton, 97,057,656. Glasscock, 61,301,844. Andrews, 54,333,888. Ward, 53,814,203. 2023 Top 10 Gas Production Counties, 1,000 Cubic Feet. Reeves, 1,092,814,942. Webb, 1,042,394,241. Midland, 817,564,332. Panola, 686,308,628. Martin, 530,178,971. Loving, 510,175,786. Harrison, 456,398,103. Culberson, 438,221,639. Upton, 399,016,213. Reagan, 376,133. 376,134,559. Top 5 oil production years. Crude oil and condensate. 2023, 1.92 billion barrels. 2019, 1.86 billion barrels. 2020, 1.77 billion barrels. 2021, 1.75 billion barrels. 2022, 1.71 billion barrels. Double E pipeline launches open season. Unsubscribed capacity has prompted Double E Pipeline to launch a non-binding open season for firm transportation on its system. The open season will end April 29th. Double E officials tell the Reporter Telegram there is currently 500 million cubic feet per day of unsubscribed capacity. That excludes any additional capacity that will be created through a centralized compression project. The company has not undertaken any expansion projects. Double E is a 135-mile Federal Energy Regulatory Commission-regulated interstate natural gas transmission pipeline that commenced operations in November 2021 and provides transportation service from receipt points in the Delaware Basin to various delivery points in and around the Waha Hub in Texas. Double E is owned by subsidiaries of Summit Midstream Partners, LP, with 70% ownership interest, and ExxonMobil with a 30% ownership interest. Summit Midstream Permian 2 LLC operates the pipeline. Summit Midstream Partners provides natural gas, crude oil, and produced water gathering, processing, and transportation services in the Appalachian Basin, the Williston Basin, Denver-Julesburg Basin, Fort Worth Basin, and Pisance Basin. It has an equity method investment in the Double E pipeline. Projects recycle oil field wastewater. Pilot efforts aim to cheaply purify brine to reduce disposal, bolster irrigation supply. Freshwater resources in West Texas are dwindling. At the same time, the oil country is struggling to dispose of dirty, unwanted oil field wastewater that is spewing from leaky wells and triggering earthquakes. It's a dual challenge that an emerging industry is working to solve. New pilot projects in the Permian Basin of West Texas and southeastern New Mexico are testing technologies that they hope can cost-effectively purify the chemical-laden brine that flows up alongside oil during the production process so it can be reused. Regulators and oil companies are heavily involved as they aim to usher in a new era of oil field wastewater recycling. The premise is nothing new. Some of this wastewater is already recycled for reuse and fracking. But efforts to recycle billions of barrels of water are gaining new momentum as the Texas Railroad Commission cracks down on underground wastewater disposal in areas of intensifying earthquakes, leaving oil companies with fewer places to put it. Meanwhile, arid West Texas and New Mexico are looking to bolster freshwater supplies and increasingly see opportunity in treating the oil industry's wastewater, also known as produced water, for reuse and irrigation, for the production of new fuels such as hydrogen, and to recharge drying bodies of water such as the Pecos River. The practice of recycling this water is gaining traction out of necessity, said Mike Hightower, program director of the New Mexico Produced Water Consortium. Quote, I think within 3 years we're going to see recycling efforts start exploding, end quote, he said, noting that Texas alone needs to come up with 7 billion gallons of new water a day by 2050 to address a growing gap between freshwater supply and demand. And because regulators and hydrogeologists believe that wastewater underground is correlated with a rash of earthquakes shaking the oil country, as well as a worrying trend of water returning to the surface through old wells, quote, we can't continue to inject like we do, end quote. Quote, why am I bullish? I need to be, end quote. Wastewater handling is an essential part of the oil production process, especially in the Permian, where 5 to 9 barrels of super salty water laced with chemicals can come up with a single barrel of oil. This flow back is a mix of the water used to frack the well and water trapped with oil and rock released by the production process. Without places to put the water or recycling facilities capable of treating it, oil companies could be forced to stop extracting oil in some areas of the oil-rich basin. It's a growing threat, given that earthquakes in the area are still trending, quote, alarmingly high, end quote, said Ryan Hassler, vice president of oil field service research at Rystad. quote, what's at stake at the worst end of this is having to shut in drilling and completions activity, end quote, Hassler said. The trick is getting regulators to set new standards for treating the oil field wastewater and bringing the cost of recycling technology down to a point where it's competitive with disposal, researchers said. To that end, there are 8 active pilot projects feeding fresh data to regulators and industry consortiums. Until there are clear regulatory guidelines on how to process the water, oil companies remain reluctant to invest in recycling facilities, Hassler said. The recycling units could cost as much as $30 million apiece, according to Joe de Almeida, Occidental Petroleum's Director of Water Strategy and Technology, who spoke during a recent conference in Houston hosted by the Produced Water Society. To make the investments, Oxy would want to know more about regulators' expectations. In response to industry hesitance, the Railroad Commission's chief engineer, Ted Wooten, assured the conference's audience that it would be up to the industry to do the research needed for standards setting. Quote, we will help implement what you establish as reasonable and good practices, end quote, Wooten said. Quote, but you have to do that publicly, because we have to have public trust in what you say, end quote. Produced water often contains benzene and other potentially harmful chemicals. So pilot projects underway are working to prove they can filter out chemicals of concern, as well as desalinate brine to standards that would be accepted for various purposes. A pilot project south of Midland by Texas Pacific Water Resources uses a proprietary multi-step process involving pretreatment, desalination, and reverse osmosis that pulls heavy metals and other toxic elements from water, removes salts, and produces water clean enough to sustain crops, said Adrian Lopez, the company's technical research and development manager. Crops appeared healthy after 6 months of study, and preliminary results were positive, she said. Alfalfa is a good crop to study because it can tolerate more salt than many plants. It is a profitable crop that could offset recycling costs, and it can absorb more water than many plants native to dry West Texas, making it a fit for an industry looking to dispose of water through irrigation rather than underground disposal, Lopez said. Quote, an alfalfa field will uptake quite a bit of water, end quote, she said. Desalination is expensive, which poses a technical challenge for water as salty as this, which often requires multiple rounds of desalination before it can be reused. Quote, that's obviously what a lot of these pilot projects are working towards, trying to figure out new technologies and ways to do this at scale, end quote, Hassler said. Quote, nobody's been able to crack the code at scale, so there's a lot of different approaches that are being tried, end quote. A separate project from Circle Verde Water in Cahoma uses high-pressure natural gas to filter water in one step, a process the company believes would be cheaper and more energy efficient. How is it doing that? Circle Verde CEO Joseph Alexander was coy in his answer, citing pending patents. Quote, that's kind of a secret, end quote.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, April 15th. Hit me with your best shot. Annual fundraiser to help Aphasia Center of West Texas. The story was written by Nathaniel Miller. Pat Benatar once declared love as a battlefield, but it doesn't take much heart to support the Aphasia Center of West Texas's annual fundraiser. All you need to do is declare that you love rock and roll. For their 15th annual Aphasia Awareness Concert, the organization has scheduled the Divas of Rock, a California-based cover band performing hits from Joan Jett, Stevie Nicks, and Heart, to name a few. Quote, we are super excited, said Kitty Benick, executive director of the Aphasia Center of West Texas. It's going to be a fun night, end quote. Tickets will cost $10 in advance for general admission and $15 at the gate for all guests 13 and older. Sponsorships are also available. Guests are encouraged to bring a blanket to sit on during the concert. A language disorder affecting a person's ability to communicate, aphasia usually happens suddenly after a stroke or a head injury. Skills such as reading, writing, and speaking are affected, but there is no loss of intelligence. Quote, the best way to describe it is as you went to a foreign country where you did not read, speak, or write the language, Benick said. You would still be the same person that you are here in the States, but you are going to have a hard time communicating, end quote. Working alongside local health facilities and rehab centers, the Aphasia Center of West Texas offers programming from 9:30 a.m. until 2 p.m. Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. People can utilize as many of these services provided for $150 a month. Program offerings include conversation groups and expand to include communication skill development and practical communication required during various activities. Those activities include gardening, music, cooking, and more. Conversations are facilitated by trained staff and volunteers and are structured to allow members a chance to share ideas, thoughts, and opinions. Skills groups are focused on helping members reach their personal goals in reading, writing comprehension, and expression. Having offered services for more than 20 years, Binnick says fundraisers like the Aphasia Awareness Concert, along with Chocolate Decadence, allow them to continue to provide services. Quote, I think it's important for people to know that the Aphasia Center of West Texas has the privilege of being the second independent aphasia center in the entire United States to open our doors, she said. If you go, what? 15th Annual Aphasia Awareness Concert. When? Saturday, April 27th. VIP party will begin at 6:15 p.m., and concessions for general admission will start at 7:15 p.m. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. Where? The Horseshoe Amphitheater, 2514 Arena Trail in Midland. Cost. Advance tickets are $10 for guests 13 and older and $15 at the gate. Visit aphasiawtx.org/concert for more information. Call 432-699-1261 for more information. Master Gardeners 2024 Master Gardeners Plant Sale. The story was written by Debbie Rowland and Emmy Almschneider, Master Gardeners. We have a date for the 2024 plant sale. Save the date and mark your calendars for April 20th. As you probably know, the pandemic has really interrupted the supply chain for many items, and that includes plants. Several of the suppliers that we have used for many years have businesses that did not survive COVID, and we have been unable to give the public the plants we would like to have. The Permian Basin Master Gardeners, along with Texas A&M AgriLife, have been educating the public on the importance of growing native plants. Native plants are different in the various climates of Texas, and West Texas is certainly no exception to that. PBMG has spent many hours putting together a list of plants that are native and nativar. These plants are proven to grow in the Permian Basin using less water and will also provide food and habitat for pollinators, which are in great decline. A friend recently said that planting for pollinators was like planting victory gardens in World War I and II. The original idea behind the victory gardens was to garden for the common good, and with that thought, Americans created communal gardens. Now, nearly 80 years later, it is time to think about victory gardens in another way, victory gardens for pollinators. With that goal in mind, this year, the PBMG plant sale is going to focus on native plants. You can pick out the right plant for your own victory garden, whether it is in a pot on your patio or a whole yard of native habitat. Gardening for wildlife, especially pollinators, is gaining interest around the world. We have a local nursery that is growing our plants this year, and the plant sale will be located there. Here is the information you need to know. The date, April 20th. Time, 9 a.m. to noon. Location, 3011 North County Road 1160, Todd Road in Midland. Payment, cards, cash, and checks. And as always, check out the Permian Basin Master Gardening blog. We have covered in depth many of the topics summarized here. So, get out there and find mental and physical wonder in your garden. If you have questions, call the AgriLife office in Odessa at 498-4071 or in Midland at 686-4700. Additional information and our blog for access to past articles is available at westtexasgardening.org. Click on Resources. Reyes chosen as UTPB Officer of the Year. University of Texas Permian Basin Police Officer Georgia Reyes is still relatively new to law enforcement, but she's making her mark. Having started with the University Police in September 2022, Reyes was named Officer of the Year for UTPB and Officer of the Month for the UT system, which has 15 different police departments. Being recognized for doing her job was really encouraging. A day for a UTPB police officer varies. Reyes says campus is usually pretty peaceful. They will provide escorts and help other law enforcement agencies. Quote, "We monitor every channel around us," Reyes said. "We'll do DPS, SO, or Sheriff's Office, OPD, and we'll know what's going on," end quote. If something happens close to campus, Reyes will take it. For example, if there is a car accident close to campus, she will handle it. Quote, "We can go from one thing to another," she added. Reyes says the environment at UTPB is healthy. The top brass knows them and knows what they need and recognizes you if you do good work. Sergeant Viviana Vasquez says Reyes is a credit to the force. Quote, "She's a very hard worker and is always friendly and professional when serving the community," Vasquez said. She added that she has always wanted to be a police officer, but at first her mom wasn't so sure. Expectations were that she and her sisters would marry and their husbands would take care of them. Quote, "Now I'm like my mom's pride and joy," she added. "My sisters, my nieces, all of them are pretty proud about it," Reyes said. At the same time, being a police officer wasn't what she thought it would be either. Reyes started with the Odessa Police Department and stayed 3 or 4 years. Quote, "I thought it was like cupcakes and rainbows kind of thing, like we're saving the day," she said. But a lot of it was negative. Quote, "You're with people on their worst days, so it was nothing but negative stuff. At first, it was like a culture shock. I had never even seen a drunk person in my life. I was super isolated. It was so extreme. But I ended up like, okay, we have a purpose why we're here," Reyes said. When she left OPD, she took a year off. She is going to school for criminal justice at Odessa College and plans to transfer to UTPB. Reyes works on an all-female shift. Right now, there are 3 on the shift, which includes her sergeant and a dispatcher. Quote, "We swap. Every 2 months we move to nights and then days," she added. Reyes said they wanted to put a woman on each shift, but they decided not to touch her shift because they work really well together. Quote, "We have 4 people in training. There's 2 people in the academy right now, and then there's two people in training. So we should be at four people, Reyes said. She's not sure what the secret is, but they do stay on top of things. Reyes is from Phoenix, Arizona, but her family moved to Odessa. Quote, I love Texas, she said. She has eight siblings altogether and four nieces and one nephew. Quote, all the girls want to be cops, Reyes said. Quake north of Stanton felt in Midland. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. The largest earthquake in the region this year happened Wednesday, about 13 miles north of Stanton, and the tremors were felt in Midland. According to the United States Geological Survey, a 4.4 magnitude earthquake was recorded, making it approximately the 75th in the area this year. It was also the strongest earthquake recorded this year, with the second largest being a 3.8 magnitude event in Los Ibanos in early March. There were no other earthquakes in the area on Wednesday, according to USGS. The quake happened at a depth of 3.6 miles. Midland is about 27 miles southwest of Stanton. Quote, most of North America east of the Rocky Mountains has infrequent earthquakes, the USGS website reads. Continuing the quote, here and there, earthquakes are more numerous. For example, in the New Madrid seismic zone centered on southeastern Missouri, in the Charlevoix-Kamouraska seismic zone of eastern Quebec, in New England, in the New York-Philadelphia-Wilmington urban corridor, and elsewhere. However, most of the enormous region from the Rockies to the Atlantic can go years without an earthquake large enough to be felt, and several U.S. states have never reported a damaging earthquake. End quote. However, last week, a 4.8 magnitude earthquake hit the eastern seaboard. Quote, the U.S. Geological Survey said over 42 million people might have felt the mid-morning quake with a preliminary magnitude of 4.8, centered near White House Station, New Jersey, or about 45 miles west of New York City and 50 miles north of Philadelphia, an AP story reads. According to the USGS, earthquakes can also occur from induced seismicity. Quote, as is the case elsewhere in the world, there is evidence that some central and eastern North America earthquakes have been triggered or caused by human activities that have altered the stress conditions in Earth's crust sufficiently to induce faulting, the USGS website reads. Activities that have induced felt earthquakes in some geologic environments have included impoundment of water behind dams, injection of fluid into the Earth's crust, extraction of fluid or gas, and removal of rock in mining or quarrying operations. End quote. Last year, there were 64 earthquakes in the region exceeding a 2.5 magnitude. Did you feel the 4.4 magnitude earthquake here in Midland? If so, report it on the USGS Felt It monitor at tinyurl.com/2xa4spv7.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.